On the show today, shock value. We've talked about perverse thoughts and outrageous conspiracy theories. But what about a shock that's more personal? The kind of shock that can upend our big plans in life.
When it comes to navigating change and trying to sustain hope during hard times, as someone who's not a particularly spiritual or religious person, I try to have as open a mind as I can day to day. That's my soft landing. It's human psychology.
Maya Shankar is a cognitive scientist. That was not what she wanted to be when she grew up.
When I was six, my mom went up to her attic and brought down my grandmother's violin that she had brought with her from India to the United States. And I just remember being so captivated by the instrument. I was really close to my grandmother, and I knew she had played it as a little girl. And so I very quickly asked my mom if I could have a quarter-sized violin of my own to play.
Maya's childhood revolved around her violin.
My focus each and every day when I woke up, it was always about the violin. Like, that's what I woke up thinking about. That's usually what I fell asleep thinking about. Kind of remarkably, my parents never had to ask me to practice. Music seemed like it was striking at something that was so intrinsic.
At age 9, she was accepted into the Juilliard School.
We lived in Connecticut, and every Saturday, my mom and I would wake up at 4:30 in the morning and take a train into Manhattan. And I would have, you know, up to 10 hours of classes. And then we'd come home and, you know, get back at around 10 or so at night.
After years of intensive training, her hard work paid off.
When I was a teenager, the renowned violinist Itzhak Perlman invited me to be his private student. This was around when I was 13 or so. And so I was like living the dream, Manoush, I really was.
What was the dream? Like, what did you envision for yourself?
It was really when Perlman took me on as a student that I received that vote of confidence that, hey, maybe I could actually do this. Maybe this could really be my career. You know, I had a special schedule at school to accommodate more practicing. Even physically, my body grew around the violin. So, you know, to this day, my right shoulder is slightly elevated compared to my left. And my spine is slightly curved because of all the hours I spent, you know, in that violin position. Yeah, it really became an extension of my body.
And then that brings us to one day when you were 15.
Yeah, so I was at summer music camp. I was practicing this very, very technical, very challenging passage of a Paganini caprice. I overstretched my finger on a note, and I heard a popping sound and was alarmed to find that it wasn't a string that had popped, but actually a tendon in my left hand.
Mm. Well, how did you respond?
Yeah, I responded really poorly. I was frustrated. I was very impatient. And so every day and probably 200 times over the course of the day, I would like touch my hand, move it around and see whether maybe things had improved and then they wouldn't have improved. And then I would pick up the violin and think, you know what, I'm just going to like bulldoze my way through this injury. And I played through months of pain, you know, just using anti-inflammatories and trying my best at physical therapy. I was just willing to do anything at all.
Did it work? Like, were you?
It didn't work.
No,
it didn't work. And so eventually doctors suggested surgery. That didn't help me. Finally, I was told I had to stop playing altogether. When I lost the violin, I expected to grieve the loss of the instrument, right? And grieve not being able to play anymore. But I did not expect that I would grieve the loss of myself. Without it, I really felt unmoored. And sometimes it's when we're thrown these big changes in our lives that it brings to the surface just how much certain things in our life matter to us, right? And how defining they were.
So Maya started to ask herself, who was she if not a violinist?
Because, you know, I was wearing blinders and I was on this speed train trying to become a professional violinist. And so I closed out all these other worlds. And so it's not just about discovering other pursuits. It's about rediscovering myself at this more fundamental level.
But it turned out once a high achiever, always a high achiever. Maya ended up earning a PhD in cognitive psychology from Oxford University. From there, she served in the Obama administration as founder and chair of the White House Behavioral Sciences team. Now she's a behavioral scientist at Google, And a couple years ago, she started her podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, which is about, you guessed it, life-changing moments.
So I realized through that experience that it can be more sturdy to anchor your identity not to specific pursuits, but to the underlying features of those pursuits that really make you tick, that light you up. And when it came to the violin, what I really loved about music is that it gave me the ability to emotionally connect with other people. And that underlying passion persisted. I mean, that's a core part of who I am. It gave me like a through line because I lost the violin. And since then, I've lost the ability to do other things, or maybe life took an unexpected turn. But I can still find that same love of human connection in other pursuits. And so I would urge people who are listening to ask themselves, like, what is my through line, right? What is the defining feature of the things that I love to do? And can I find that elsewhere when life throws me a curveball?
Maya Shunker continues from the TED stage.
Change is scary for a lot of us. For one, it is filled with uncertainty, and we hate uncertainty. Research shows that we're more stressed when we're told we have a 50% chance of getting an electric shock than when we're told we have a 100% chance. I mean, we'd rather be sure that a bad thing is going to happen than to have to deal with any uncertainty. Change is also scary because it involves loss of some kind. By definition, we're departing from an old way of being and entering a new one. And when we experience a change that we wouldn't have chosen for ourselves, it's easy to feel that our lives are contracting, that we're more limited than before. But when we take this perspective, we fail to account for an important fact, that when an unexpected change happens to us, it can also inspire lasting change within us. We become different people on the other side of change. What we're capable of, what we value, and how we define ourselves, these things can all shift. And if we can learn to pay close attention to these internal shifts, we may just find that rather than limiting us, change can actually expand us.
So clearly you have bounced back. Are you, I don't know, is grateful the right word? What do you, when you think back on that moment and where you are now, can you draw a straight line?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think it's too high a bar for all of us to try and reach gratitude in the face of every change. That might be unreasonable. But one thing that I felt time and time again through all of the changes that I've endured is that there's a huge amount of self-discovery and growth that happens along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much mystery around the ways in which change in turn changes us inside. You can take two people who are experiencing the same external change situation and their internal response is markedly different. And I think when we can tap into people's internal states as they're navigating change, that's where the true wisdom lies. Often we're united by our psychological response to any situation. So someone going through a divorce might find the most resonance in the story of a cancer patient who feels their body has betrayed them in some way.
Mm.
And I think there's a hopeful message there. I think it helps us feel connected across all of the challenges that we face in our lives.
You mentioned that you are going through another change yourself, or you had an idea of what your life was going to be like, and it's not working out exactly how you'd pictured it when it comes to starting a family. Are you okay to talk about that?
Yeah. So in 2020, after years of fertility treatment and trying to match with a gestational surrogate, we found this wonderful woman, Haley, who is pregnant with our baby girl.
Mm.
My husband, Jimmy, and I were just over the moon that finally this dream of parenthood was coming true. And then we found out that Haley had miscarried.
Oh, gosh.
And I remember thinking in that moment, wow, I feel so unprepared for this change. Like, I might have navigated change earlier in my life, but man, the emotional, like, gut punch of this is so overwhelming. And I don't feel like I have the tools needed to get through this moment. And I felt really discouraged and just felt like I needed help and I needed human connection. Fast forward about a year and a half, and Haley was now pregnant with our identical twin girls. And we were again, so thrilled. And then unfortunately she miscarried.
Oh.
And I...
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I think more recently I've been reflecting on my current journey when it comes to parenthood. And one thing I learned with the violin was, what is it that I loved about the violin, and can I find that elsewhere? And I think in the domain of parenthood, I'm asking myself a similar question, which is, what was I craving from parenthood, and can I find that elsewhere?
I mean, it also sounds like a very organic process. I don't hear you slipping into clinical speak in any way, you know, saying, well, I'm just suffering from PTSD or whatever else. You're not labeling it. You're talking about the human experience.
Yeah, I think that that's how I'm processing this, is just as a human experience. So
a hard one.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to be a mom, but becoming one has been difficult. And my husband and I have had to navigate pregnancy losses and other heartbreaks over the years. And now I'm not sure what will happen. I'm asking myself how this unexpected challenge might change what I'm capable of, what I value, and how I define myself. I'm still figuring things out, but what I can tell you right now is that I'm imagining a future me who is expanding her definition of what it means to parent, who's perhaps finding what she craved from motherhood in other places. At a minimum, this exploration has allowed me to loosen my grip on the identity of mom just a bit, and I found it freeing. I'm beginning to see change with more possibility, and I'm hoping you can too. Thank you so much.
That was Maya Shankar. She hosts the podcast A Slight Change of Plans. You can see her full talk at TED.com. Thank you so much for listening to our show today, Shock Value. This episode was produced by Katie Monteleone, James Delahousie, and Harsha Nahada. It was edited by Sanaz Meshkinpour. Our production staff at NPR also includes Rachel Faulkner-White, Matthew Cloutier, and Fiona Guerin. Irene Noguchi is our executive producer. Our audio engineers were Patrick Murray and Gilly Moon. Our theme music was written by Ramtin Arablouei. Our partners at TED are Chris Anderson, Michelle Quint, Alejandra Salazar, and Daniela Balarezzo. I'm Anoush Zamarodi, and you've been listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.